The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, I sat my first mindfulness retreat, Vipassana retreat, in Thailand with a somewhat famous Thai teacher named Buddhadasa. And it was a 10-day retreat. And the opening evening, the opening day, we met at a little amphitheater in his monastery outdoors. and he gave a little talk to us about the retreat and about what he was teaching. And I remember nothing about what he said. Except when it was time to finish, then we were all kind of finished and we were all kind of being dismissed, or we could leave, and got up in the little amphitheater to walk out. As some of us were walking by him, he had an afterthought. He said one more thing he wanted to say. And I don't know how many people heard it, but I heard it. And it he said, "Don't do anything that takes you out of your body." So I thought that was strange. That was completely perplexed me. Why would he feel like he had to say that? What does that mean, not leave your body, and don't do anything that takes you out of your body? So that teaching kind of resonated, stayed in my in my ears, in my mind, through those 10 days. And one of the things that led to was that I started noticing when I wasn't in my body. And I was surprised how often I was not aware of my body, connected to my body. And I started to notice what it was like when I was not connected to my body. And the first place I noticed was on my way to lunch. So we had only two meals a day in the monastery, at breakfast and for lunch. And so meals were kind of a big deal, and there was no snacks. And so usually I was a young man, and so by lunchtime I was pretty hungry. And the meditation hall was kind of up on a hill. It's a big monastery out kind of in the jungles, and you had to walk some paths through the jungle over the fields to get to the place for the eating. It's kind of downhill. And I noticed that the felt sense was that I was going to lunch, that I was just walking, I was about a foot or two in front of my body. It's, you know, my thoughts, my interest, my focus, my preoccupation was where I was going. It's a very important place, food. And so it was kind of like, I don't know if I was literally leaning, but I certainly was energetically leaning, and I was no longer connected to my body. Thank you. And so that was the beginning for me of a wonderful adventure, which continues to this day. And that is to be in my body, to be connected to my body, to be aware of my body, to have mindfulness of the body, mindfulness centered on the body. And I find it a great, wonderful thing. And even as I was sitting here, maybe because I was going to talk about this, but even just normally, I find it a great ride, a great kind of, you know, like sometimes it feels like, you know, coasting on a bicycle or riding on catching the wave, you know, in swimming, you know, you caught the wave and you're kind of right. To be really grounded or centered in the body and feel the energy, the aliveness of the body, the shifting sensations of the body flow through me, is a wonderful experience to have. And it's kind of a trip in itself, but it turns out that being grounded or centered in your body is a source of tremendous wisdom. There's a lot of benefit that comes from it. And this teaching about the benefits of the body, to stay close to your body, goes back all the way to the Buddha and to the disciples of the Buddha at his time. A wonderful way that this mindfulness of the body is emphasized in the very early Buddhist tradition was that soon after the Buddha died, one of his primary disciples, Ananda, was asked, "Now that the Buddha is dead, now that your teacher is dead, who will be your teacher?" And the Buddha explicitly did not appoint someone to be his successor. So he explicitly did not make someone the next teacher after he died. So then the question is, who's your teacher now? And Ananda said, "Mindfulness of the body is my teacher." That's quite an impressive statement to be made, that if you no longer have one of the great teachers of humanity, the Buddha, if you want the second best thing, or the equivalent, you find it here in yourself, in your body, mindfulness of the body. I think that's a remarkable affirmation of the value of being here, connected to yourself. And if, just like I did at that first retreat, if you kind of review yourself, look at yourself, pay attention to how you go through your day, and see if you can notice how often you are, in fact, grounded or centered or aware of your body, and how often you're not. And it seems like my guess is every generation says almost the same thing sometimes about certain things. And one thing that I've heard said now for 40 years, nowadays, people are really out of touch with their body. And, you know, it used to be better, you know. It seems like it's... But I'm kind of inclined to say the same thing, that the way that our, especially here in the modern West, the way our technology is working, I think people are less and less connected to their body. I see people walking around. There's one person near my home. I see her walking regularly. Sometimes she's walking her dogs on a leash. And I've never seen her walking around without looking at her screen, at her phone. She's kind of hunched over, looking deep, studying. I don't know what she's doing with it. But I've never seen, she's kind of a neighbor. I've never said hello to her because she's not available for that. And I've never seen her look around, even notice that she has neighbors, or look around at the trees or the sky or anything, or even look at her dog that she's walking. You know, just the screen. And it's my imagination, looking at that, that she's not really connected to her body. She's connected to what's on the screen. And I think that this movement that the people have when they're more and more on the screen than they were 30 years ago, I think there's something about being on a screen which activates the cognitive parts of the brain, activates a variety of different parts of the brain that are more about being in the head, being in the mind, so that we're not so grounded anymore or aware of what's happening in our body. And I hope I'm wrong for some of you, but I think it's kind of a relatively fair assessment of what we see happening in our society. But there are other reasons why people are not connected to their body. One of the reasons is by being, if you're really present for what goes on in your body, you're present for what's going on for you in your life. And if you have distress, if you have psychological pain, if you have grief or sorrow or anger, many things are very uncomfortable to feel. Some people would rather not feel those things, or sometimes it's just too difficult to feel them. And so the removal of attention from the body, or say differently, the removal of attention from difficult emotions goes hand in hand with the removal of attention from the body. Because the the source or the place where emotions are experienced and known is through the body. Without the physical expression of emotions, it'd be very hard to know what you're actually feeling and knowing. And so when we separate ourselves from the emotions, there's often a separation from our emotional life. And sometimes because, as I said, it's because it's too painful. It's very painful to be present. I had a friend who was teaching mindfulness to a retired police officer, and who came to learn mindfulness because he had a very intense back pain. And one of the first classes, then my friend told everyone in the class, he said, now you really have to go and bring your attention into your body and feel your pain. Just experience it. And he got angry because he was there to not feel it, to find a way to not experience it. And so he got angry, and it took a while for him to learn that, in fact, if you there's a way of turning attention into the body that is can be healing or can be freeing, but it's useful to connect to it and not avoid it. When we avoid our body and thereby avoid really knowing what's happening with ourselves, we limit ourselves. We're not present for the full aspect of who we are, and so we don't have all the information about what makes us operate. We don't understand why we do what we do. I've seen this often, that people who are not so in touch with their emotional lives will operate in occasionally in kind of magical world. If it's really extreme, and they're really not in touch with the psychological forces, the emotions going on, they can't understand why they are certain ways, or why they react certain ways, or why they feel certain ways. And so they have to try to make some sense of it. And so magic thinking seems to kind of come in and kind of fill the gap that wouldn't be a gap if they were really grounded and centered in their body, so they can feel and know what's going on in a fuller way. The body provides a tremendous amount of information about what's going on. And one of the piece of information, if you're really tuned into what goes on in your body, you'll understand where you feel stress. You'll feel the tension that we carry around with us. And that information of tension is a very important thing to feel, because only then, if you feel it and know it, can you, in a helpful way, begin to soften and relax and let it dissipate. Do something about it. If we feel tension but don't do anything about it, then it kind of builds. So there's one way which I do it sometimes, even to this day, and this has to do with the screens. Sometimes I'm working on my computer, and I'm kind of motivated to do what I'm doing, but I feel like I'm getting a headache. So it seems like the reasonable thing to do is to stop. But sometimes I continue, even though I kind of know I'm going to get a worse headache. Now, isn't that strange? Maybe as a meditation teacher, I shouldn't admit that. But there's this drive, to kind of stay connected . But if I had really, if I took that information in, and I could have made the choice to stop, do something else, go for a walk, meditate, stay off for a while, and I know that the headache would have dissipated pretty quickly. And that's actually, I do that sometimes, but there are some times where I kind of go through. So the idea of noticing the tension that we have is very helpful. For meditators, it's very helpful also to be connected to the body, to notice where tension builds up when you meditate. And sometimes it's by staying connected to the body that we get the first indication, oh, I'm really striving or pushing or resisting something very strongly. Because you can start feeling it sometimes in your face, in your jaw, in your forehead, in the eyes, in the stomach, in the hands, many different places where the tension builds up for us. But it is not just difficulties that we experience by being in our body. But also some of the wonderful things that we can have in our lives are found through our body. Some of the, we have much greater emotional sensitivity, awareness, greater empathy when we're centered in our body. And because the body's like an antenna that picks up or reacts to or responds to the world around us and constantly. And so if we kind of feel what's going on in our body, we'll get the early indication of what's happening, sometimes before the mind knows what's going on even. I've made it a habit of mine now to stay connected to my body as much as I can. And so I start feeling, certain kind of warmth, certain kind of energy or aliveness in parts of my body. And I say, oh, that's interesting. What's going on now? And then I say, oh, I'm feeling a certain way. Sometimes I'm feeling maybe a little anxious. Sometimes I'm feeling kind of very warm-hearted and loving. Or sometimes I'm feeling I'm in the middle of some kind of challenge. And I feel that there's a place inside of me of calm that's arising in relationship to the challenge I'm in. And the first indication of that place of that calm place is in my body. And so then I kind of bring myself into, I kind of rest back into that calm place, and then the challenging situation is much easier to go through. So back to the time of the Buddha. There's a lot of teachings about how useful it is to stay connected to your body as you practice. And this is some examples of things that were said. When developed and cultivated, mindfulness centered on the body leads to abandoning of unskillful mental tendencies. Mindfulness centered on the body leads to the growth of skillful mental tendencies. It also leads to the motivation to practice for awakening. It's kind of remarkable that something about being grounded in your body, centered in your body, really living in your body, that somehow that stimulates a motivation for spiritual liberation and awakening. Why is that? What is it that this, this lump of flesh we have, it's material stuff, that... I mean, it can't be that important. It's just like, it's the kind of thing that you have to kind of, it's mostly there to carry your mind around, right? And so, what is it about this body, this lump of flesh, that if you're really centered in it, is a source for spiritual motivation? And it also, the Buddha said, that mindfulness centered in the body leads to safety. So you're safer as you go through the world if you're connected to your body. One of the things you're safe from, maybe the most important thing you're safe from, is from yourself. Because if the self-awareness you have, an understanding it comes from being grounded in your body. It leads to understanding. It leads to direct knowledge and vision. And it leads to living at ease in this very life. There's something about staying here that helps bring ease. I think of mindfulness of the body as the great balancer. If you stay grounded in your body, you're not going to go into extreme swings one way or the other, but you're going to find a very satisfying place of balance as you go through your life. You're not going to be reactive to what happens this way and that. I think of mindfulness of the body sometimes as the keel or the ballast of a boat that keeps you from tipping over too far one way or the other. Just staying here, being present. One of the words in the ancient tradition for enlightenment is the deathless. The whole experience of spiritual liberation is an attainment of what's called the deathless, amata. And it's a word that lends itself to kind of a mystical or metaphysical understandings. Like this place, that deathless, a transcendent, unconditioned place that you can go to or experience. And some people who get into this too much sometimes touching into it or something, well, actually, the pendulum will swing too far if they're not grounded in their body and get a little bit over-enamored with it or over kind of caught up in the experiences of altered states that can come, experiences of freedom that can come. And the Buddha offered a kind of corrective or a kind of a safety or a grounding for this. Here it is. He said these kinds of things. One does not enjoy the deathless without enjoying mindfulness of the body. This is kind of nice. One does not enjoy enlightenment without enjoying mindfulness of the body. So in other words, enlightenment is not something that's disembodied. It's not something that takes you out of your body into some kind of ethereal world. It's something that belongs grounded in this body, in a sense, in this world. When one enjoys mindfulness of the body, one enjoys the deathless. That's also nice. Something about the enjoyment of being in your body, the mindfulness of the body, is closely akin or close to the same thing as enjoying the deathless. One does not forget the deathless if one has not forgotten mindfulness of the body. One who develops mindfulness of the body develops the deathless. One who has directly known the deathless has directly known mindfulness of the body. So for me, these are very powerful statements about the value of being connected and grounded in your body. I think sometimes it's counterintuitive to be in your body, being stopped, because it's kind of like stopping. We can have so much momentum in our mind and so many important things we want to do and accomplish, like me and my computer sometimes and allowing myself to get a headache. We can kind of be so involved in things that seem so important that to really be aware of what's happening in your body is a kind of slowing down or is a kind of a stopping of the momentum and concerns of the mind. And we have important things to think about. Why should you stop thinking about it? Why should you allow yourself to kind of feel what's happening in the present moment? It's like me going down the hill to lunch. The lunch was so important, I was leaning into the future to get to it. How often are we leaning into the future and not grounded in what's here present? How often are we, you know, lingering in the past and we're not really present here for this body, for this experience? So to take to feel inspired or to feel motivated or to feel the great value of mindfulness of the body is part of the task, so that we want to do it, so we're inclined to do it, to show up for ourselves, to be here. And I hope that as you do meditation practice, as you practice mindfulness, you'll start feeling the rewards of being present. And it becomes a self-perpetuating, self-rewarding, that you feel, oh, this is better than the alternative. In fact, to be really grounded in the body as you go through life, you probably engage whatever you're doing more wisely and more effectively. So one example of this for me is sometimes when I feel like I have a lot to do and feel like a little bit harried by all the things to do, I find that one of the best things I can do for myself is to stop and meditate. And sometimes I'll sit down and meditate for 10 minutes. And miraculously, after those 10 minutes of sitting, I have more time. But when I first sit down to meditate those 10 minutes, you know, there's a little voice inside that screams and says, no, there's no time for that. I have too much to do. And I've learned not to listen to that voice because generally it's, you know, not a wise one. And I've learned if I sit down that somehow time opens up, because part the sense of time and hurry is partly a mental construct. And so when you're not caught in that grip of it, it just things can be more spacious. So sitting down to meditate is a great thing to do. And one of the things that it does is, you know, we're connecting to our body. Some of us do it through mindfulness of breathing. The experience of breathing is part of the body, mindfulness of the body. And we're grounding ourselves in the present moment through our physical sensations as they occur in the body here. And one of the nice ways in which this works is to stay connected to the sensations of breathing, to the body, to the experience here. It is an alternative place for our attention to go instead of going into our thinking. And most sources of, one of the primary sources of stress, de-stress, fear, anger, resentment, grief, has to do with how we're involved in our thinking. Often the more difficult emotions we have a huge component about them, have to do with the way we're thinking, the way we're kind of involved in our thoughts and connected to our thoughts. And many people have strong emotional difficulties, strong emotional feelings they have, and they're trying to think their way out of them. They're trying to figure out, how can I do what I do? Not realizing that the energy of thinking, the way that they're thinking, is the very thing that keeps those difficult emotions fueled, keep them going. And so it can be very hard because we're trying to think out of it, but, you know, it's kind of like you have a small spot on your floor, and you take a dirty rag, it's full of mud, and you get it wet, and you kind of wipe the little spot up, but it makes a bigger spot. So you kind of rub more, and you rub more, and rub more, and as long as you're using the dirty rag, it's just going to stay dirty. It's not going to get cleaner. I don't know if that was a good example, but, but maybe just prompts you to think of a better version of it. So just like thinking yourself out of some problems, it often just kind of keeps yourself rubbing in it and rubbing in it. So by switching attention away from thoughts into breathing or into the sensations of the body, for those few moments that you do that, you're not involved in those patterns of thinking. You come into your body. And especially if you can come into your body and just do a little bit of kind of settling into it, feeling it and settling into it, then some of this tension that holds the thoughts in place begins to dissipate. But even if you can't relax your body, just simply staying present for your bodily experiencing, feeling what's there, the body knows what to do. The body will begin to relax itself. It's remarkable how you don't have to do a lot in meditation except be present in your body, and the body begins to shift and change. Partly because a lot of the holding and tension in the body is kind of like the puppeteer of the mind is pulling on your muscles. But if you're not operating the puppeteer, the strings relax and the body will relax. But if you go back into thinking, the muscles will tense up again. So simply to stay in your body and feel the tension that might be there, it begins to dissipate and settle more and more. And as the physical tension of the body settles, because there's such a strong connection between the mind and the body, as the physical sensations of the body settle and relax, there's less energy, juice, fuel going into your thinking. The thinking is not fueled so much. And then as the thinking is not fueled, it quiets down. And sometimes it quiets down enough that some of the difficult emotions that are stimulated by the thinking are no longer being stimulated. They fade away. And so rather than solving our problems, we dissolve our problems. And this is a really important principle, that meditation often is not about solving our problems, but letting them dissolve. So it's coming back into your body, feeling what's there, allowing the body to resolve itself, to relax and settle, to show itself what's going on and help you not be so easily swayed by the thoughts you have, by the authority of the thoughts, to stay chasing the thoughts, involved in the thoughts, so letting the thoughts dissipate and quiet down, and letting the things become stiller and quieter, gives us greater and greater connection to the body. The more the connection is to the body, the more sensitive instrument it becomes, and the more subtle and sensitive the self-awareness becomes. And it's really remarkable what you can discover about yourself and the depths of where you can go in yourself if you're really grounded and connected to your body. So whether it's the difficult emotions, difficult thoughts, or whether it's the beautiful things of great spiritual experiences, mindfulness of the body is the ballast, the balancer of it all, that keeps us grounded and supports us, supports the mind from not getting lost and racing off. So we're centered here in this place, in this home that we have, the home of our body. So I'd like to end this talk with a little slogan for the kind of maybe summarizes this emphasis on mindfulness of the body. And now you can use a slogan if you like, kind of a little encouragement to yourself, just say it to yourself. I've used it and found it very helpful. And that's the two words, stay home. With your body as your home. It's a great home because it's portable. You can take it anywhere you go. So stay home. Stay home here. And part of what's nice about the word home for me, I don't know if it's true for you, but is the idea that a home is where you can be yourself. You can walk around in your pajamas and it's okay, or, you know, and whatever. So it's very comfortable. So stay home here in yourself. Stay home in your body. And then see what arises, see what unfolds as you do that. So we have about 10 minutes. If some of you have some questions you'd like to ask about mindfulness of the body or something else, you're welcome to. If you can use the mic, that would be nice.
Thank you for that. I think it's on, yeah. I have an understanding of being present when I'm alone, but where I struggle, and I'm realizing as I was hearing you talk, that I'm a teacher, a high school teacher, and so I'll have 120 students, and standing in front of them, my energy is actually outside of my body while I'm teaching. So thank you for the slogan. That may be all I needed, but I just wanted to thank you for that. And if you have anything more about this sense of entertaining or which is kind of what it feels like being a teacher sometimes, is, especially for young people, is maintaining some higher energy so they're not getting bored and that kind of thing. So it has felt risky to stay home, like I'm not going to be able to perform or keep their interest in the same way, even though I know better, in that I will probably be more present to their needs, basically. 18 years.
18 years you've been a teacher. It's a long time, and it's a great profession. It's a great thing to offer. So you're probably pretty, you know, rooted in your profession. So maybe you can experiment a little bit. You might take some risks, little risks, maybe 5-10 minute risks when they first show up, and see what it's like to start off with the assumption that you will connect with them if you are centered and grounded in your body. But the thing about it is that share that groundedness with them. So stand in such a way that your presence is really there. So you know, you don't just kind of hunch back into your chair and be mindful of the body and kind of look up sheepishly. Mm-hmm. You know, stand right in the middle of the class and stand tall and stay grounded and centered and say, "I'm here. Are you there?" you know, really feel yourself and see what happens to you if you after 17, 18 years, you probably have a lot of understanding of how to connect to the students. It's kind of intuitive now or inherent. You don't think about it. So see if it can operate, if it can come out of you more naturally if you're centered and grounded in your body. So you don't have to plan it, you don't have to think it, you're not leaning forward to make it happen. You don't have so much at risk. Because once you have a lot at risk, you're probably not going to stay in your body. So take some risk and imagine yourself there's no risks. Stay in your body and see what comes. And experiment with different ways. How does that sound?
Thank you, yes.
I feel very lucky to be a teacher and sit in front of you all like this. I've been doing this for years. And sitting in this way of sitting is my meditation posture, right, also. So I get to speak in front of an audience in this posture that I've just done a lot of mindfulness of the body. So it's kind of like second nature for me to try to be aware of my body as I speak. I've learned a lot about myself by doing this. And I think I'm a better person because of what I've learned at sitting here giving talks. One of the things is, noticing when I feel worried that I'm losing the audience. I have to make extra effort to entertain them or do something. And this mindfulness of the body is great help because I notice if I start leaning forward, that's a... okay, Gil, pay more attention. What are you doing here? Where you think you feel like you're needing to speed up or lean forward and make your point stronger so people understand you and stay interested or something. And that's not healthy, that's not good. So I notice that, and I come back and settle back again, stay home. And that's been a great process for me, and I feel very lucky to have all these years of doing this.
Thank you. I'm sure you know the person I'm going to mention, and when he used to say, "Your only home is your body," I often would look at him and watch him on campus. He was a favorite professor of mine, sociology of religion, Robert Bella.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but he would say all that, and I always felt he was disconnected from his body, that he was in his head. And it was really interesting to me that this past weekend I saw one of the most brilliant, poignant documentaries that touched me so deeply. And it was produced this past year, and it's called Mr. Gaga. And it's about the director, choreographer of a world-renowned dance company, Bat Sheva, which happens to come from Israel, and they dance throughout the world. But his message was so easily absorbed by the dancers, and his message was, be in your body. And the next thing, as he was coaching these dancers, it was amazing how they responded. And I was thinking about Gabrielle Roth, who some of you might know her work, Anna Halperin. And what I realized from them, in terms of reconnecting with them, it's their process of being in the body somehow, because it's so physical and it's not coming from the mind to the body, somehow makes it happen. Mm-hmm. And in my row there were dancers sitting there, and I was talking to them about what is this Gaga stuff. And it happens to be Gaga came from when he had a back injury and he began by crawling on the floor in his healing process. And so he was saying Gaga, you know, blah blah blah, but Gaga. And so they called his process Gaga. But when I asked one of the women, what does this mean to you, she said, you're really in your body, number one. And then she recited all the messages of the Buddha and mindfulness, but from a dancer's perspective. So I guess what I'm asking for you, from you, is somehow just going from your head place to get into your body, it seems so hard. And it seems like the dance process makes it so much easier. And I remember those moments when I did take workshops from Anna and Gabrielle. And I've noticed I love sitting, but I don't really feel like I'm in my body most of the time. Mm. Whereas in the dance process, it just kind of carried over. So any comments about that or thoughts?
Well, there's physical activities we can do that brings us into our body pretty strongly, pretty wonderfully. And so yoga, dance, seven rhythm dancing is a great thing to do. For meditators doing walking meditation, sometimes they feel more connected to their body. So there's certainly things we can do, but there's a kind of a delicate thing or an art in this because there's different ways of being in our body. It's not just one way. So, for example, you see this very clearly sometimes on retreat, or some people have experienced this on retreat, where out of the retreat, they like to run a lot. It feels like their running really puts them in their body. All this blood is going, energy is going, it just feels really alive and great. And it is great. It's a wonderful thing. But you go on retreat, and you're over the days, you're getting quieter and quieter, and it takes a lot of work for the busy mind to quiet down. And after some days, the busy mind gets quieter and quieter, and body feels more pliable, soft, gentle, present. It feels really good to be here, finally. And then, so, you know, yes, being in the body is great. I'll go for my run, because those runs really does me great. And so they go for a run after lunch, and in fact, they feel great. So the endorphins are going, and they feel really good and everything. And then they go to meditate. And they realize when they sit down to meditate, they've jumped up to a more energetic level. Their thoughts are spinning much more. They feel their body more. But all the work they had to get really concentrated and still has been all kind of broken up or speeded up. And so they're in their body, but in a way that's not so deep and sensitive and quiet. So the art of this is how to use physical things. How does it connect it to our body? And how is it the right medicine? When is it the medicine for how we're living our life and what we're doing? If I'm on after I've meditated sometimes, I feel so connected to my body that if I went off and did kind of seven rhythm dancing, it'd probably be a lot of fun, but I might actually lose the deep intimacy I have rather than get more intimacy. But if I'm running around, living a busy life, getting a headache from being on the computer too much, and and just kind of like not so much in touch with myself, I can get grounded by doing dancing. So that's the right medicine, maybe. So it depends where we're at. But I think for the deeper and deeper work that we can do, meditation is because it doesn't involve a lot of desires and wanting and trying to do stuff, even something spontaneously like dancing, it allows us to go deeper and deeper into the energies of the body, and something really deeper can be released and be freed and be seen. So I think meditation. So you're saying for you when you sit and meditate, it's hard. Start with your posture. Your posture is a way of dancing. It's a way of dancing without moving. So choose a posture that really represents for you being alert, being calm, alert. Take a posture that expresses what you're trying to do. A posture that expresses being really in your body and grounded in your body. And the best you can. And then find out where is the strongest sensations of your body? Where's the most energy or aliveness in your body as you're sitting still? And then ground yourself in that. Breathe with that. And see what begins happening to you. And as for Robert Bella saying that, this professor, wonderful professor of religious studies, that sociologist of religion, He said, your body is your home. And he didn't seem like he was very much in his body.
Yeah. So, I loved him.
Yeah, he was brilliant. But what we don't know is what his reference point was. And it could be that he was so brilliant, so much in his head, that even just for him, being just a little bit in his body made a huge difference. But for all the rest of us, we see that person isn't so much in his body, but you don't know where he started from. So I'm sure it was, he knew what he was talking about for himself. So thank you all, and I hope that your body can be your home and a place of comfort and wisdom and liberation. Thank you.